Hello, this is Aaron Stone of My Epic, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
Next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav. How y'all doing? Happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. I had a good day today. I got sunburned. That was stupid. You think I'd learn by now? But I didn't. And now my back matches a couple of my daughter's shirts. So, way to go, dummy. Anyway, got an opportunity to talk to Aaron from My Epic. Thank you, Shannon Quiggle and Face Down Records, for making that happen again. Face Down just keeps handing me the gimmies, man. Easy layups. I love it. And I decided to bring one of my new friends that I met through the podcast. His name is Jacob Russell, buddy of mine who I met through Twitter. And he came out to visit me at a show. We got to hang out and meet each other. What a rad guy. I thought, hey, he actually recommended you should talk to My Epic. I said, that's funny, you should say that. Face Down said the same thing. Would you like to come on and help me co-host? And he was like, of course I would. Sounds rad. So I got to bring on a fan of the show. How cool is that? So Jacob helped with a little bit of the lifting here, which is good, because I honestly had no idea about the story about a house that My Epic started to help people in need in their area. I had no idea that even existed, and Jacob brought it up. So, thanks, dude. Good looking out. So we're going to knock out this intro real quick. I got some exciting stuff coming up. I want to finish with this and get this all going and everything, because I want to watch Game 7. Golden State and Cleveland. And coming up this week, man, I don't know what we're going to do with the podcast schedule. I will do my best, but I've been sitting on this one for a while. I am going to Canada with Zayo. They asked me, well, I kind of volunteered because they needed somebody to handle their merch and help drive a little bit so they could sleep. So I'm going to Canada for the first time in my life. It's going to be pretty cool. That is going to lead to some cool stories, to some cool podcasts. I already have a couple things lined up on who to talk to and make connections with them. I know Marty from Zayo is going to come on, but we purposely waited until after this trip so that we could talk about the trip. It's going to be great. It's going to be a really cool show eventually when it gets done. But hey, get there when I get there, man. There's a lot going on around here. A lot of recordings going on. A lot of things coming up that I cannot wait to tell you guys about, but they're not done yet because I got to depend on other people to mix and master and record their parts. But got a cover song coming up with some other folks that I know that you know about if you follow the podcast. It's going to be kind of cool. Anyway, enough about that. Playing a little ditty underneath this called Hail from My Epic's album, Behold. And then we're going to get into it with Aaron and Jacob. And I'll see y'all around. Take care. Happy Father's Day.
King of all kings. King of all.
So we're here with Aaron from My Epic, and we have a guest host today, Jacob Russell, friend of the show. He's hanging out with us too to help out.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing, gentlemen?
Doing good.
I'm well. I'm really well. It's good to. It's a great Memorial Day. It's beautiful here in Virginia, so it's good to be talking to you, Travis.
It is. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you very much. It is literally Memorial Day morning, and this guy is on his way to a hospital to help people in need, and that's he's squeezed.
Well, you make it sound like as though I can do surgery or something. I don't know how much I can help other than like encouragement and prayer, but I'm gonna do what I can. You know, if I need to get my hands in there and get dirty, I'll give it a shot. You know,
you're helping. You're doing what you can.
Yeah, I played Operation as a kid, so I figure it can't be that far off.
Water on the knee, collect $1,000 fee. I think. $100 fee? I don't remember how much it was, but
I always touch the sides on that one.
This is kind of a neat story too, because in speaking to Shannon Quiggle from FaceTime Records, again, thank you, Shannon, for another interview and another band.
She's the best.
She is pretty much the best. She's practically working for me at this point. I probably owe her money, I guess. But in talking to her and meeting Jacob out at a Zayo show in Pittsburgh, just getting to talking to Jacob off to the side and everything, he was like, oh man, I loved your everything in slow motion. By the way, you should talk to My Epic. And I'm like, that's funny, you should say that. How do you know My Epic? And he told me a little bit of the story about how you two kind of know each other. In the meantime, he didn't even know that I was working on the side to get you on. So I said, hey, would you be interested in coming on and talking to him? He was like, yeah, of course I would. I'll help you out. So he's here. He's here to help carry the load a little bit. How do you two know each other?
Yeah. So we formed at college in Lynchburg, Virginia. And so Lynchburg, Virginia has always kind of been a home for us.
Okay.
I mean, that being said, I haven't been there except to play shows in the last 7 years or so. Just like every few years we go there and play a show. But there's kind of a family there. And Jacob's one of the guys that I just always see and always talk to and always encourage each other. There's probably a bunch of other connections too through other mutual friends and whatnot. But really, he's just one of those guys I just expect to see at Lynchburg show and talk, maybe go grab there's a place called the Texas Inn where you go get like a cheeseburger with a fried egg from like a bunch of people in like the seediest place in town. One of the ladies looks like Wayne Newton with no teeth.
Wow.
And it's just an awesome place where if you say the wrong thing, you're going to get kicked out and cursed at. but it's one of those kind of places where Jacob's one of those guys I kind of expect to see the show and maybe go get a cheesy Western after.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Fried egg on top of a cheeseburger. It sounds good, but it actually kind of, I felt my heart slow down a little.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, there's a great story where when I was in college about 10 years ago, this brand new band that everybody was excited about called Copeland came to town. They played a show, and my friend who was the promoter was like, I'm going to take you guys to this amazing place. And he took them there, and they looked around, and they were like, man, honestly, we've been taken to a place like this every night the last 10 weeks. Like, can we please go somewhere and get a salad? So that's the famous Copeland snubbed the Texas Inn, you know?
Well,
so what are you going to do?
Well, I've heard those stories too, where it's like, you know, I'm in town and I know a buddy and everything, so he's got to take me out drinking for a couple drinks, and got to take me for pizza, got to take me for like the best cheesesteak in town. And these guys are on the road for so long, and they're like, can I have a quiet corner and a salad and a book? That would be fine. I'm completely worn out.
We were just on tour. And the promoter, like, we were, like, advancing the show, and he was like, do you guys have any food desires? And It's funny because I think nowadays I know you're in a band, Trav. Do you guys still tour much? Or
me? No, my goodness, I haven't. I barely toured when I was quote unquote touring.
Okay. Well, the cool thing now is I feel like all the promoters just pay your food buy out up front. They don't even try to buy you food anymore. They just give you cash, which is so choice. Way better. Get whatever I want. But one guy called us and he's like, hey, what do you guys want? He's like, I was thinking maybe pizza or spaghetti or maybe some subs. And I was like, those are like the only three things we definitely don't want to eat.
Right.
Which is a bummer because you feel like a diva off the jump, you know? Like, yeah. None of those things are okay, please. We'd like, some kind of arugula spinach salad. Some kind of anchovies would be great.
Like a Cobb salad and a mineral water, actually.
Yes, 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 please. As I drink my tea with my pinky finger in the air.
Jacob, you're back. You got your headphones?
I'm back. Is it better?
Sounds 100% better.
So much more Aaron, pro, Jacob. So much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're almost there. Aaron was just telling us how he kind of knows you and everything. Why don't we hear your side of it? How do you know Aaron?
Oh, all right. So we go back, believe it or not, you might not remember, but to middle school for me, Living Word Baptist Church.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
John Rulo, Jake Martin, Kevin Kramer.
And Aaron's gone.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. This is going to be a rough one.
Yeah, I had my headphones, but they weren't plugged in, so.
This is gonna be a hard one to edit.
You guys there?
Hey, there he is.
Dad, gone. I had to like shut the app down. I'm sorry. I'm gonna pull over in 1 second at a place where I know I have good service. I apologize, man.
Okay, no problem. I don't want to interfere with your stuff either. I mean,
no. You, this is a block of time. It is completely given to the As the Story Grows podcast, and I apologize.
Oh, that's
going so poorly.
It's okay.
So yeah, I totally remember Jacob from. I used to help at a church when I was in college, and that's kind of the first place we started playing shows.
Okay.
And it was called Living Word. It was like the perfect punk rock place to throw shows.
Oh, it was amazing.
Like crappy couches everywhere.
Uh-huh.
I remember one time a Plea for Purging played there and the floor almost collapsed.
Yeah.
So it was a rad spot. Jacob was one of the dudes there. Yeah, I totally forgot about that, Jacob.
That's awesome. Jacob, you mentioned to me that's your favorite band. Didn't you go see Plea like 30 times or something?
I saw them 19, and I'm up to 30 band shirts.
That's it.
Well, yeah. If you've got $10,000, you can get them to reunite. Otherwise, they're not going to do it.
I know. I kind of mentioned that on Twitter one day, and Andy was like, hey, $10,000 or $15,000, and we'll do it. And I said, all right.
I find it fascinating that you cannot do laundry for an entire month and have only used Plea for Purging shirts. You didn't even get into the other bands yet. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to start a side project called A Plea for Laundry.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Speaking of that, I got to do laundry again.
Write that down. That's our working title. That's the funniest thing I've heard so far. A Plea for Laundry. Right. All right.
Oh, yeah. You played with them a few times, I think, right?
Yeah, they're good friends, actually. When we were on tour a couple years ago, they weren't on tour, and the guys kept showing up. Like, one night Aaron showed up and hung out, and one night Andy showed up. They've been – everybody always talks about how weird it is that we're on Facedown. I guess it is a bit odd, but it's always been a good home, and they're one of the bands – who really made us feel at home. Andy would always tell people they needed to watch our set at Facedown Fest because we were actually the heaviest band on the label. So
yeah.
So yeah, we love those guys. They're great dudes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a weird home. I think for people that have been with Facedown from the beginning and you just assume that that's the hardcore basketball jersey label, like you kind of have to get that out of your head. Facedown's expanded quite a bit since then. Obviously, like Shannon keeps throwing me all these like post kind of kind of post-metal bands, like kind of sounds like you guys kind of, I throw you guys into the category of, I have to be careful. I don't piss anybody off, but, you know, there's so many sub-genres of metal. I kind of park you guys in the same parking lot as Thrice. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's fair. I think it happens because we like the same things they like.
Yeah, it makes sense.
They're definitely a great band, and I enjoy them a lot. But they were never set out to sound like them. I think when people ask me, "What do you guys sound like?" and they're just Joe Schmo on the street, and I don't know if they know much music, and I'm trying to pick like really big bands that they'll kind of know. I kind of always say if the Deftones, the Foo Fighters, and Explosions in the Sky had a baby. and the baby was not as good as any of the parents. That would be our band.
Let me give you, I know you're on Face Down and tour and everything, but let me give you some veteran advice from a guy who did metal back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
When a kid comes up to you and says, "What does your band sound like?"
Yeah.
You sit back and you go, "Well, it's kind of, well, let's start with you. What, like, who's like your favorite band?"
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Metallica," or they'll say "Red Hot Chili Peppers," or they'll say something insane, and then you go, "Oh my God, so crazy you said that. That's like a huge influence of ours."
Oh yeah, well, and for then, sure. I mean, I know you're supposed to hem and haw and act like, and then you're supposed to say something like, "Well, we really don't sound that much like anything," and then you finally assent to something. But I guess at like 33 and just it says in the Bible that that there's nothing new under the sun. Everybody stands on shoulders. So I just kind of skipped the,
I thought that was
the
Zeppelin.
Pretentious. Yeah. They well, you know, he got his lyrics from somewhere. They were actually a Christian rock and roll band, Travis. Did you know that?
I did. I kind of loved how Zeppelin and Sabbath kind of dabbled with Christian lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, Houses of the Holy. Where do you think that was coming from?
Right on.
But yeah, so at this point, it's funny though, because kids are always going to say you sound, if they like you, they're going to just say you sound like something that they like. I mean, when early on, we ended up playing like a lot of like youth groupie shows, and we definitely don't do that anymore. And just tell our booking agent, like, we just want to play shows, right. Which has been going really well, but over the last 6 or 7 years. But over the first couple years, just some kid had only ever heard one rock band before. I had one kid be like, "Hey man, you ever heard of the band Creed?" Yeah, I've heard of Creed. He's like, "Man, you guys sound just like them." And I know
what
he thought. He was like doing me a solid, you know. Or the other one was, "Hey man, you ever heard of Linkin Park?"
What? Like,
yeah, man, I've heard of Linkin Park. So you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, Thrice, we definitely tread some common ground, for sure.
All right, I'll take it. I didn't hear Creed.
I always thought you sounded like Foxy Shazam, but that's just me.
That's what we're going for.
Now, in general,
we kind of, at this point in our career, it's kind of like we write really big, heavy songs that have groove to them, and there's a lot of dynamic in the music, and then there's a pretty strong ambient post-rock element to it. That's kind of like what I think we do well.
Yeah, I think that's what I meant. When I said post-metal, I think I meant the ambient post-rock thing, kind of have a splash of like a, oh God, I have 50 bands running through my head, don't know which one to pick. Whatever, just go listen to them. That's the whole point of the show.
Exactly. Please do.
Go see them live.
Or yeah, go see them live. You guys are all over YouTube. There's plenty, I mean, everybody is nowadays. There's plenty to check out. I'll put some links in there. People can check this out if they've never heard it.
For sure.
But Aaron, let's get into this. I did a little bit of homework on it, and it looks like you have one of those similar to Becoming the Archetype stories where there's like a common thread with your lineup. People left, came back. Now you have like a little bit of an Iron Maiden thing going where the entire original lineup is back together and you kept an additional member. Like little bit of a Turnstile thing going. So in looking at it, can you tell us a little bit about the formation of it and how this all got started?
Yeah, so it started in college. My senior year of college, my old band broke up. And
who's that?
You would never have heard of it. It was called Shaddai.
Okay.
I have their patch.
Jacob's definitely heard of it. And nobody else needs to hear of it.
I have your demo.
No links to that, please, Travis. But we started Shaddai. We ended that band, and And so my brother and one of the other members of that band, his name was Matt, wanted to start a new band. And so I was like, I know one guy that I think I'd want to play bass. And I really just wanted him to be in the band because I thought he was a rad dude.
Okay.
And I mean, like, a lot of integrity, just a good hang. I didn't know how good of a musician he was. And he came to the tryout, and he couldn't play the only riff that I showed him. And I was like, this is the guy. And so that's Jeremiah. And then pretty soon after Matt transitioned out, our friend Travis joined for a while. But for the longest time, the core of the band was me, my brother Jesse on drums, and Jeremiah on bass. And so when we first signed, we were a three-piece. We had had some friends join for a little bit and then decide, like, oh, I got to go to grad school or whatever. Mm-hmm. The one thing I can say is we've never had a single member leave on a bad note. Like, well, everyone who's ever been in our band is still, like, one of our closest friends that we talk to, we hang out with. In fact, almost all the guys that have been in the band are the dudes that if you come see us play and somebody can't make it, they'll be the ones filling in.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's kind of like a big family. So it's me and Jesse and Jeremiah. And then in 2010, we put out our second full length with Face Down called Yet, which is mm-hmm. kind of the one that started to really do stuff for us. And
okay.
definitely the first record out of our catalog that I'm totally proud of. I think I'm proud of everything I've ever done in the sense that, like, that's the best I could do at that time of my life. But if I just met you, we were hanging, I would hand you our new CD and our last couple all the way back to Yet. And I probably wouldn't give you anything before that. Record, my brother left the band because, it's a long story short, but his wife never knew her father and actually met her dad the day before their wedding. Crazy story, but
wow.
they decided to move to Detroit to get to know him, just to love on him and basically give her some time with her dad. And so that meant he couldn't tour anymore. And so we had a buddy, we call him Cousin Matt, but he's none of our cousin. He joined the band for a while, and then Jeremiah had to stop touring as well. And even though those guys were still helping me make decisions, they weren't technically in the band, but when I had a big decision, the core has kind of always been me, Jeremiah, and Jesse.
Okay.
And the guy who filled Jeremiah's slot, his name's Tanner. So, mm-hmm. I mean, long story short, everybody got to a place where they could do the band again. And Cousin Matt wanted to go to college, so Jesse came back to play drums, and then we started writing four-piece stuff. And so Tanner is actually a really good guitarist, and had been in another band on Face Down called Hope for Home, which is really good.
Okay,
that's right.
So Tanner just moved to guitar and kind of put everybody, my brother back on drums, Jeremiah back on bass, and Tanner kind of naturally, I'm very riffy and Tanner's very ambient, makes lots of clouds and stuff with his guitar.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we've been. We put out a full length with that lineup in 2013 called Behold, and then the new EP this year, Viscera, and that four piece is just really feels like we're finally, I think every record it's been the right people in the room, but yeah, the whole original band is back together plus Tanner, and it just works really well.
Excellent. That's good. That's nice to know you have a backup too, in case, like, this one had a kid and can't make this 3-week stretch or something. All right, just call the other dude and see if he's available.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's like yeah, for sure. Like last year, we had a lot of dates that Tanner couldn't do, because of because of him getting ready to get married, and he was starting a company. And so Travis, our the other guitarist we had back in like 2006, mm-hmm. filled in a bunch of shows. And we just did a tour, and Tanner got married a week before and couldn't do it. So our friend Nate, who we've known since like 2008, like filled in a bunch. So yeah, since we kind of stopped treating the band like a binary thing and just kind of realized it was more of a family. And the important thing for us is who's in the room when we're writing.
Right.
And that's the part we really fight for. And then the touring, man, it's just, you just want good. I mean, you said you used to tour back or play shows back in the day. Touring is just, man, you just want good dudes, good people with the same heart, the same attitude, who are problem solvers and not negative people. You just want, we keep it posy on the road, man.
Right. Yeah. And well, I mean, it's not about me, but I didn't tour so much as we did. Like, we were like hyper extended weekend warriors. You know gotcha. What I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Like, we'd knock off work Friday if we had to or something. And then we'd trek all the way out to Ohio to play a show. And then on the way back, hopefully hit a show. And then like, I'd be rolling in at 11 o'clock at night on Sunday so I could get up and go to work Monday again. So it was like, we never really got in a van and did the whole like stay out there for very long periods of time. We did like a couple shows on the way to Cornerstone or a couple on the way home or something, but it was never like, okay, I'm leaving. Like, I never got an opportunity to do that. Like, when you talk about the food stipends, I laugh because it was like, I used to bring power bars because there was no, we didn't have anybody doing that, you know? So
yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, we did the thing that you're talking about for the last couple of years. Since 2012, we haven't been a full-time band. I mean, in our hearts, it's still a full-time thing that we carve big time out for. Most of us don't have a hobby. Like, My Epic is just a second job, and it's really important to us, and it's something we love. And if we get to keep making genuine art that we care about, that says something that we care about, we're going to keep doing it. But mm-hmm. the last 4 years, we've kind of done that weekend warrior, just fly out for a festival, lots of fly out dates. And it's been good, but maybe you can resonate with it. It's a little frustrating because you feel like you're playing at like 90, 95%, but you want that last 10% so bad. And for us, it always came on the road. You know, after two or three shows, it just clicks and you don't have to think anymore. And then all this new stuff starts to happen. It just feels so natural. And so the last couple of years have been good, but a little frustrating to play those shows because it's like, oh man, we just weren't. I'm sure the fans notice, but like, it didn't. This year we've started a new thing where we're trying to release one EP every year and do one nation full US per year. And we kind of, our jobs are very gracious to say, hey, we're not going to try to disappear five or six times for an extended weekend. Can you give us 3 weeks? And they all somehow crazily agreed to it. We did our first full U.S. tour last month for the first time in 5 years. And
that's
it was
amazing.
Great. It was great. The first two shows were great, but the third show, it just clicked. And the rest of the tour just felt like, yes, like we're doing it. As good as we can do it. There's no regrets. Anyone who comes and sees us, I feel like we're doing it better than we've ever done it.
Right.
So that's been good. It's been something we've been looking forward to. So we're trying to stop doing the weekend warrior thing, but it's really just us trying to figure out how do we do this with even more longevity to the best ability we can.
So let's talk about your job then. You said you were a pastor.
Yeah, geez.
So you make arrangements like head, are you talking head pastor of a church?
It's pretty much a cult.
Okay, good.
Well, now I'm excited.
this just took an interesting turn. And I'd like to tell you about Zorp, our great overlord.
It's not the spaghetti monster.
I'm a pastor at my home church that I grew up at in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I was gone for 11 years. Like I was in college and grad school, and then I lived in Charlotte where the band was full time for 5 years. Uh-huh. And the pastor that I grew up under is not the pastor there anymore, but they called me. So I'm the music worship pastor, creative kind of guy.
Okay.
And then actually 6 months into being here, they hired my best friend, who's our bass player, Jeremiah, as our communications director. So he lives in town, and then my brother had already moved back from Detroit, and he lives like literally two streets from the church. He's like a deacon, and he plays drums with me at church a lot. So three of us live here and all kind of go to the same church.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what I do most of the time. And I really enjoy it. It's honestly not that different.
So when you guys take off for 3 weeks at a time, what do you just shut the church down or what?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, we just have everybody drink the Kool-Aid that's prepared, and then we just have to start over again.
Just keep all your tithes. Save up all your tithes, and when we come back, there'll be a bigger plate to pass around.
Yeah, save them up. Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, it's just our senior pastor and our senior staff just having vision to see something bigger, to not just think as very binarily. Because if they did, it'd be like black and white. Like, oh, right. If you want to do that, then you have to leave. But they kind of see kingdom value and the same heart behind our music. Really, it's just about integrity. The same thing that leads us to want to write music is the same thing that leads us to want to do what we do for a living. Mm-hmm. We never sat down and decided, like, let's be a Christian band or how do we make all these songs religious? It's just that relationship kind of informs everything we do and ends up touching on it. So, right. Thankfully, it's a church of about 2,000 people, and I've been the last 4 years that I've been there full time. I've been raising up and mentoring in the church. We call it discipling a lot of younger guys, mm-hmm. and younger ladies. So now the talent pool has really grown, and there's about 10 or 12 people who I've raised up who can lead in my absence. And I have a couple of interns. We started an internship process too, where for creative internships. We have a full time. A music intern, a full-time graphics intern, and a full-time video intern, and Jeremiah and I oversee them. And what's actually funny is the way we kind of let people know is through my Epic. So a lot of the guys that are in those internships, they came because, oh, the guys from my Epic have an internship.
Right.
So they serve, and so it's a really cool family. Like, shout out to my intern, Matt. He's from Albuquerque, and he started in January, and so he knew that I was going to be gone for 3 weeks. So he really kept the ship afloat, and all the other people, amazing people at my church that are all, some of them are like soccer moms and some of them are like businessmen, and they're all kinds of all walks of life, honestly.
Right.
They just kind of step in and fill the gap and it works out really well. We're very blessed. We can't really do it more than once a year, but it works well.
It sounds like you have the same, kind of a community, a communal setup with covering the church as you do with My Epic, just in case somebody can't hit that 3-week tour. You know?
You have a
pool of talent to pull from. You sound like a sports team.
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, I think some of it's just a little bit of humility and just seeing like, it doesn't have to be all about me. It doesn't have to be all about us.
Sure.
And so, you know, who can we get together to do this great thing? Mm-hmm. And I'm big on, I really don't care to do anything. I like being alone. That being said, I don't like doing things alone. I don't like doing endeavors. If I'm going to do a creative endeavor, or something like a big project, man, I just want to get as many people involved. I want to mm-hmm. put them in a place where they're using their skills and their abilities and their talents. I want to let them do their thing. I think everybody succeeds. Like, for instance, you know, Shannon does our public relations, and her husband Davey does our artwork, and mm-hmm. you know, Jason owns the label, and people ask me all the time, like, oh, did you have anything to do with the artwork? Do you do your booking? And I say, listen, man, I'm barely good at being in a band. So let me do the part that I've kind of got pretty good at, and let me do other people do the thing they're really good at and just trust them to do it. I think it works out much better that way.
Yeah. You need a team. You can't do it all yourself.
For sure.
Very good. Sure. I like it. Jacob, what are your thoughts? What do you got?
Oh, I just, that's one thing like I can't stress enough to people is like, go see My Epic because the music might be soft, but I mean, you guys have always brought it hard, playing. And like you said, I can see how, tours, you know, after a couple of days, you just click. Cause like, I mean, when I saw you guys last month, you guys are leaps and bounds, like so much improvement. It's been awesome.
Well, thanks, man. I don't know what we have to do to not be called a soft band, Jacob. This is driving me crazy, man. We play with baritones and drop A.
That's true.
But it's just like, if you don't scream, kids are like, it's soft.
And it just, I know.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's funny because I heard that a lot on this tour from, I guess, people that have become fans in the last 5 years since we haven't been touring. And one of the things they say almost always right away is, dude, it's so much heavier live. I don't know what we have to do to get that to come across on the records. I guess I'll just start screaming the whole time.
No,
don't do that.
No, don't do that.
No, keep doing what you're doing. But it's really cool because, I mean, I know that I've brought people to shows and, you know, we listen to it on the car or something and they're like, oh, I mean, we're going to see A Plea for Purging. And we're listening to this and they're playing, and then they walk away like, holy crap, that was amazing, the energy. Like, and you guys are, what I love about you guys too is you guys practice what you preach. Like, didn't you guys have a house down in North Carolina?
Yeah, so when we left college, or I left grad school and the other guys finished undergrad. We didn't start this thing till a little bit later in life, but we all moved to inner city Charlotte, and we kind of, I don't know, for us, it was just a really simple thing of we're pretty intense about this whole Jesus thing, and how can we really take this thing serious? And so we just decided let's move to a place where people are struggling and just try to help, because that seems like what he actually did. So
yeah.
We picked a broken neighborhood in Charlotte. It's actually called Optimus Park, ironically. And it was one of the more downtrodden neighborhoods in the city. And we just moved in and we rented the only house we didn't have a lot of credit, being a bunch of dudes who had just finished college and played in a rock band. It wasn't like we had great credit or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we just moved in and we built as many bunk beds as we could. In an 11 by 11 room, we fit 9 in there. So like nobody could sit up in their beds, and the beds were like a foot apart. Like one guy's like a foot from the ceiling and one guy's like, you know, that's kind of how it was. And, we just started helping people. We started throwing free cookouts and hanging out with homeless people. And it just grew. In a year and a half, we had to move to a bigger house, and we kind of we lived communally and just kind of shared everything. And that's kind of what we were doing when the band got signed and started touring. And so it's kind of that same thing you're talking about, Travis, where we had kind of a community. So when we'd leave, there'd be other guys that would kind of run it that lived there too. But we didn't have a 501c or whatever the heck that's called.
I don't even know what that is.
A nonprofit status. We weren't a nonprofit. We weren't an official ministry. We didn't make t-shirts. Like I grew up on punk rock is what I grew up on. And then metal and punk kind of came, metal and hardcore kind of came into my vision later. And when I say emo, I mean early emo,
like,
which was stuff I really liked, but,
like what? But
the whole punk rock thing was just like really wanting to just do it. So we didn't have a name or anything. We just did this. We just lived there and helped people and just saw some amazing things happen and some crazy things happen. I mean, I could tell stories and stories of like, I played laser tag with a drug dealer one time.
Okay.
I found crack in my sugar bowl one time.
Wow.
I mean, we saw a homeless guy get his life together. And so we said, hey, why don't you're not doing anything. Why don't you be our tour manager? So for about 2 years, if you'd seen us on tour, you'd see three
That's
guys
right.
in their mid 20s and a dude who was 50 with like a, and now Dave, we called him the American legend. He wore tight black jeans, black t-shirt all times, usually like an old Lynyrd Skynyrd or AC/DC shirt.
Nice.
An American, a Confederate flag bandana over his long hair with a big beard and always a cigarette.
Okay.
So you got these three young guys. That was our tour manager, Dave. He didn't have a job, so we just took him.
That's awesome.
So it was just like, instead of talking all this talk, like, we were just trying to see like what would Jesus actually do. So it was fun. It was awesome. And yeah, because we were signed to Face Down, the first 2 years, like all we played was hardcore shows. But because we grew up out of punk rock music, like we're all about like going nuts and flipping out and like really meaning it. So I remember one time we played a straight edge hardcore festival in Pittsburgh called Sincerity Fest.
Okay.
And I was like, dude, we are going to get beat up. Thankfully, like we're all bigger dudes with beards, so we figured we had an outside shot of like making it out alive. And we got to the show, and I was like, these kids are gonna hate us. But we have friends in this band called Advent. Advent was there, and they're good friends of ours, so they were kind of talking us up. And we played, and all the kids just like loved it. And ever since then, like we've been invited back. We haven't got to go many years. Our friend Jay runs it, but we've just been given a lot of favor, I guess, just to walk in worlds we don't necessarily belong to be in. So
that's cool. Circle back to what you said before about growing up on punk rock and some of the early emo and everything. Give us some examples.
Oh, well, when I was in high school,
wait, how old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to put a timeline on this. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So no, I'm 33 and the other guys are Jesse and Jeremiah are 30. And Tanner's like 25. He's a bit younger.
Okay.
But But yeah, when I was growing up, at first my parents like limited my intake a lot. Like it had to be in the Christian bookstore.
Sure. Yeah.
So I pretty much had MXPX, Slick Shoes, Goatee Hook, Five Iron Frenzy, all that stuff was like my obsession. Mm-hmm. And then I had all this contraband hidden, which was like the Deftones and Rage Against the Machine, Smashing Pumpkins for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. Nirvana, Foo Fighters. I mean, I'm old enough to have been on the tail end of grunge and really have felt that.
But right. early
emo stuff. I mean, I remember seeing a band and them saying they were emo and being like 16 and being like, "What the heck is emo?" And they were like, I was like, "Do you mean punk?" And they're like, "No, we're emo." And I was like, "I don't know what that is." And they played, and I said, "You're just punk, but you use sound effects," is what I told them. And they told me I should go listen to a record called Clarity by Jimmy Eat World.
Right.
And that blew my mind and opened a world to like a bunch of, I mean, Pedro the Lion probably was a big one for me too.
Okay.
Mostly like that mid to late 90s stuff.
Okay.
Promise Ring. I mean, I had buddies that were really big in Appleseed Cast, which I know is kind of a different thing, but.
Sure. Like the Appleseed.
Yeah.
This is I'm finding the timeline now, and I understand where you're dropping in.
Yeah,
little older than you, so further down the pike, I was listening to that stuff.
That's kind of probably whatever I just said to you is probably lame, and probably the stuff you like is probably way cooler
because
you're older. That's how it goes.
Well, I appreciate anybody younger telling me that what they think I did was cool because I don't get that often, especially my kids. but I remember, and totally not doing the whole like, "Oh, I was back in the beginning," but I got into Jimmy Eat World. Well, I was though. Yeah. I got into Jimmy Eat World at Static Prevails, and I love that album. And then to watch them progress. See, I was never that guy that was like, "You're not screaming anymore, boo." I was always the guy that was like, "Oh, you're moving towards more musical. You know, like that's great." And I watched the progression, and then when Clarity arrived, I was like, "Wow!" Like I didn't expect him to get this good this quick. Already,
oh man!
You know?
I mean, I went backwards into Static Prevails, which is a great, great record. But like we were in
I love
studio,
Static Prevails.
We've recorded all of our record, most of our bigger records with Matt Goldman in Atlanta, who's the man. And we were down there in January, and there was a young hardcore band, really sweet dudes. They're called Capsize, and we were hanging out with them a bunch. I think they're on Equal Vision. We were hanging out with them and trying to relate, trying to like just hanging out, you know, just growing down. And all of a sudden I realized that one of their guitarists was like super into like early emo. And we started talking about American football. And then it was just like on. He had a Never Met tattoo. And so then he was telling me all these, I can't even remember all the bands he was listing, all these old early emo bands. And I was like, "Oh yeah, I saw them," or, I bought that CD when it came out, and it was cool because all of a sudden I felt like I was a celebrity in his world. but they were great. But the thing was, he could play all their songs, and I don't know how. He pulled the guitar and be like, "Here's the riff," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I never learned it. That's awesome."
See, it's funny that you're saying this. I'm steering towards a point. I went out to have a couple beverages with Scott Hatch, the guy from Burnt Toast Vinyl. That I had on the show, and then him and I got to be like, "Oh my gosh, we live so close to each other, we should hook up." And he had a buddy and his wife come meet us. And we just got to talking music, and he said, So what in your opinion, asking me, in your opinion, when you say like early emo, what are you talking about? And I said, "Well, I came in when everybody else did. I Sunny Day Real Estate, like I was right there."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Yeah, that's a common misconception." And I said, "Okay." And he was like, "Yeah, in my opinion, it started with Rites of Spring and everything." And I said, "All right, but you asked me when I came in. Like you didn't ask me what the first one was." And he was like, "Right, that's fair, that's correct." So you're always going to have that one upper. And the guy, like, he wasn't being a dick about it either. He was just totally like, "Let me show you my chops," kind of a vibe. You know what I mean? And that was fine. We were just playing, really. But there's always going to be that one guy that was like, "Yeah, but that wasn't the foot to put this with." But there was this other one. But there's this, and you start getting it down to like this nitty gritty. There's four cassette tapes in existence. You know what I mean? And
you're just going. And that's the thing, man. People just like what they like. And people just
Exactly.
They just hear. I mean, I mean, I kind of wanted to make a joke a second ago about, like, well, whether it's Rites of Spring or Sunny Day Real Estate, we can all agree it's not My Chemical Romance. But the thing is, like, some kid when he was 14 heard My Chemical Romance and it blew his mind. And,
exactly.
And that's great. That's fine. I mean, you can't really control what you like. And that's why there's got to be a certain humility involved if you really want to be an artist and not just a rock star. When you make something, you put your heart into it, you put it out there, and if it resonates with people, then you should just be thankful and just keep doing it. But not like, man, if some people don't get it, there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe it didn't speak to them. Maybe you didn't write the thing that was where they were at. But, I mean, it's just, we can all turn into that guy. You know, I think we've all been that guy, you know?
Just you saying that you grew up on punk rock and you said Goody Hook and MXPX.
Oh, totally.
I can hear dozens of people I know go,
they're wanting to talk about NoFX and Rancid or even go before that. But see, I grew up close enough to DC that, like, once I became aware of, like, oh, DC has some serious, real roots. Like, my buddy, one of my buddies at my church, he moved to DC and he ended up being a part of another church, and they play at some middle school. He's like, dude, I'm playing at the middle school that Fugazi went to. And they played some of their first shows at. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like anybody can get laughed at, but it's like, why be a jerk? Yeah, so, exactly. I mean, I should have said I grew up on Christian punk rock in the mid-90s. It was just all I had access to, man. It was all I could get to. And what's funny was the first time my dad raised me kind of on kind of Christian music / the Commodores. Like, that was the one thing I was allowed to listen to. And but so you'd think that that would have informed all my choices. And I do have a massive love for R&B and still do. But
me too.
But for sure, like The Weeknd, stuff like that, I love it, old and new. But the first time someone put headphones on me and it was power chords and fast and it was punk rock, I just liked it. You know, I didn't know why. I just like, you can't control that stuff, you know?
Right.
I think I'm glad we've all grown past that, giving each other a hard time for the things you like. I don't really have any musical guilty pleasures. Like, if I like it, I just like it, you know?
Oh, I'm it's about community. Jacob, how old are you?
I'm 26.
He's 26 years old, and I'm 40, and we're friends, and we hang out and talk about music. If you're gonna make that pre-decision of, oh, he's into stuff that I can't be into because I'm too cool and old school for that, like, I'm gonna learn from him. He's gonna learn from me, and now the pool just got bigger. Now he might be into a band that was popular in 1986, and now he got me into something that just came out 3 years ago that I didn't know about because I'm just not paying attention anymore. Like, that's how this is supposed to work. You're not supposed to build walls, you know?
Oh, for sure. And I'm super careful not to say that I think something's bad, unless I'm like just with one of my best friends and he knows my heart and I can joke around. But usually I'll just say I don't like something, not that it's bad. You know, like, it's not my thing. I don't like it. But it's so much of it has to do with context too. You know, a kid might like My Epic, not just because they like the songs or the band, or, I mean, not that we have much of an image, but that it just hit them at the right moment. And that's how it is with good records. Like, when I bought Clarity, for instance, I had been told you need to listen to this record. I bought it and caught a plane with my family to go on a trip to Maine. And all I listened to the whole time I was in Maine was Clarity. I'm just getting my mind blown out of the back of my head
on
this record. And I'm just seeing these amazing, beautiful mountains and, like, the bay. And
yeah, Maine is like 93% trees and the rest is a beach.
Yeah, yeah. Gorgeous. The one thing I didn't see while listening to Clarity was whales. I went on 3 whale watching expeditions listening to that record. Didn't see a single freaking whale. So, strike out on that. But it just hit me at that moment. And so now whenever I listen to it, man, just so many good vibes. So I'm probably the only maybe one of the only people who, like, associates Clarity with, like, Bar Harbor, Maine. But I do, you know.
Yeah, but that's a cool story. That in itself is a cool story because now you got me thinking, like, and anybody who's listening, go dig through your record collection and dig through your CDs and remember, oh, yeah, I remember where I was when I got that and it hit me and I did go on a trip and I only took 3 albums with me or something, you know.
Like,
that's the stuff that burns an image into your brain, not, you know. Here I go again with the tangible and the downloading music and everything. When you go, oh, that's cool, and I run to YouTube or I run to iTunes Music and I click it and I load it in my phone, that wasn't a moment. Like, that didn't – like, that just happened, and that's one of the 50 things you did when you touched your phone that day. Whereas you know, now you have Clarity connected to Bar Harbor, Maine. That doesn't go away, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's the same thing that you're, once you make a fan, they create those moments for themselves, even if the technology is fighting against it. So some people I know that, like, when, like, for me, when a new record comes out, like the new Radiohead for me is big.
Okay.
So I haven't even listened to it yet because I haven't had that chance to sit down, create that moment that I want to have with it, you know?
Right.
I'm not just going to, like, play it over my phone into my ear, you know, like, randomly.
Exactly.
So I know people that have learned that. They still create that. But for the younger generation, I don't know if that's a part of the experience. And I definitely think it can hurt the experience, you know, if they're not, like, because that record's been out for 2-3 weeks now. I was on tour, and there was no chance for me to really give it the say that I wanted to.
Right.
So I totally get what you're saying.
You're right. And you need to have the sit-down time with it. And I think it's being lost on this generation. I'm really sound like an old man now, but I think, but the hope that I hold is that if somebody really wants to dig into music the way that some of us older folks dug into music, they're going to find a way to sit down and take the time with it. I know everything is distracted now. Like, my kid can't even play video games unless he's on the phone with somebody talking about it while he's doing it. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
like eventually if music is the cream that rises to the top, they're going to set the other things aside, the other distractions. And I mean, I barely do anything without my phone in my other hand, you know, and while I'm listening to the podcast, I'm working. While I'm listening to music, I'm doing stuff on my way somewhere, driving. Like, I'm trying to take time to sit down in front of my record player and just stare at it while it spins in a circle and really just focus on what I'm listening to. And it's hard. Like, people don't have that kind of time anymore. And
being present is something we talk a lot about in our band and in our church and my friend circle, period. Just, man, be present where you're at. If you're going to do something, like, be in that moment.
Right.
And be there for us. You're going to miss it. And I think what's happening, and I don't think we're old men for recognizing it, I think it's something everybody's going to recognize sooner or later, is everything gets diluted.
Yeah.
And all your experiences are less valuable and less enjoyable. You derive less out of them. You think less. There's a lot in the Bible about not just reading, but meditating, thinking upon the things. You know, the Bible says that over and over again. Meditate on these things. Think mm-hmm. on them. Just stop and, like, just...
Yeah.
Chew on it for a while, and that's
what, shut up a second and listen.
I mean, it says one verse just says, "Be still and know that I'm God." Like, just chill out for a minute,
right?
And I think that's a practice for me in my life is a discipline of silence and solitude. So yeah. I'll go alone and I'll get away for like a whole afternoon or sometimes even a day. And I couldn't make records if it wasn't, like, when I put on our last record, I put about 100 hours into every song lyrically. Just the lyrics, because it's that important to me.
Uh-huh.
And most of that was just me sitting alone in quiet, just thinking. But that's where the good stuff comes from. And we have a natural tendency, especially, it's hyper now for sure. We don't want to deal with silence. We don't want to be quiet, because God forbid we have to actually deal with our thoughts and what we actually think. We just want to be, you know, the right word is distracted, but we have a word that we don't think about anymore, which is entertained. We want to be entertained, and to be entertained is kind of just to be kept busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it used to mean when you go to someone's house, they were to entertain you for a few hours. It means they just keep you busy. I don't want to be kept busy all the time. I want to think the thoughts that are uncomfortable. I think that's when you find the good stuff.
You notice how pissed off you can get because traffic took an extra 3 minutes. Or if somebody I get to a customer's place and they're like, hang on, can you just wait? Just give me like 5 minutes. Like, that 5 minutes isn't going to kill me. But have you ever stood at someone's apartment door and waited for 5 minutes for them to come back? It's like, it feels like an hour and a half. And the whole time you're like, they're being disrespectful. And you start like you said, entertain. I need the stimuli, and it's not happening right now. I need to be doing something.
Well, and all of our tolerances.
Sitting still is a bitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And all of our tolerances have been shaved down to so small. And so we, you know, I have to talk a lot about with the guys in my church. It's just, man, we've lost just a basic human decency and kindness. Just to give each other a little space, because we're rushing to and fro. But the real reason is just so we can get back to being distracted. You know, like we're in such a hurry so we can free up all this time. The reason we're freeing up all this time is, you know, to watch 6 hours of, you know, Netflix or whatever, which is really just distraction. You're not.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the first song on our new record is kind of about that. And I kind of, the chorus hook is, if it costs me nothing, is it worth anything? And when I look back, even on my 33 years, the things that are the most valuable things to me are the relationships I have, the records I've made, the big projects I spend a lot of time on. They're things that were very costly to me. Mm-hmm. And the things that were very easy don't matter that much. Afternoon, I have off because it's Memorial Day. I'm gonna sit down and probably just lay around with my wife all day and recover from the 3-week tour we just got off of.
Right on.
And I will really enjoy that, and I'm really looking forward to it. But at the end of my life, it's not gonna be one of those things that I think about on my deathbed. You know, those are the things that cost us a lot, and I'm afraid that we're moving more and more towards just wanting to be entertained, kind of like that prophecy of the movie WALL-E, of everybody just sitting in a seat and, you know, getting fatter and fatter and just partaking and not making. Like, we've become such a society of consumers and not producers. And so it's important to me that the things I really put my life into are costly. Like, if they don't cost me some gray hair, then they're probably not that valuable in the first place.
I like it. That's my whole mentality behind, we're going to go pastoral for a second. And I don't really dub this a Christian podcast or anything, but
for sure.
That's kind of how I feel about tithing. Is if you're gonna blanket rule 10% because that's what's in the Bible, that's not the point of it, in my opinion. The point of it is, like, I wanted this $25 for me, but I'm going to remove that from me and put it elsewhere because that person needs it more. And that's, like, it's the attitude behind it. It kind of has nothing to do with the monetary amount. It has to do with where it came from, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. And something that I think has been heavy on my mind and heart the last maybe 5 or 6 years, and that I find myself saying a lot when I'm dealing with someone who's really struggling, I usually end up saying, like, you think too much of yourself. And what I don't mean is you think too highly of yourself. What I mean is you think too much about yourself. You're obsessing. If you start thinking more about how you fit into the world and others and how you care about them, you'll have a little bit less depression and a little bit less, you'll give yourself some slack because the world's not revolving. You're not the centerpiece, you know? Mm-hmm. I think certainly being conscious and aware of our actions, like what you're saying, but like you just said, the point of that tithe is almost to remind ourselves that there's other people that need it, that we need to be giving people, that we've been in a place where we've needed it. So totally agree, man. Totally.
Right. Good. Jacob, you back?
I'm back. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Yeah.
I'm in my car now.
You're in your car.
That makes two of us. How amazing would it be if somehow Jacob and I got into a car accident right now together with each other?
That'd be pretty crazy because I'm not even driving.
This podcast would have to be admissible to a court case. Oh goodness gracious!
It'd be something new. Be something new for the fans, yeah. Man.
There you go.
Yeah, well, really.
But we're about to bring this thing in for a landing anyway. So
okay,
that's great, man. Thank you. Thanks for the talk. Thanks for all the information. Thanks for taking the time to. I know that you want to go hang out with your wife and you want to go pray for people at a hospital, and you took the time to talk to me and Jacob. That's sick. You shouldn't have done that.
Oh man, I'm never into. I just feel so thankful to get to make music and to have a family like Face Down and get to put music out and all the people that support us. I'm just so appreciative of it. My our view as a band has been since the first show. Probably no one's gonna come. Why would anybody come? Why would anybody buy this? And that puts us in a place of just getting to be really thankful and it's just been overwhelmingly humbling all these years that people have supported us and that the band's continued to grow. So it's never a problem for me to give some time to this thing that we care so much about. But I just say, anyone out there, if you have a chance to do it, maybe go give our new record Viscera a listen. We put our heart and soul into it. It matters a lot to us. And maybe don't listen to it on your phone when you're driving and watching something on Netflix. But if you can give it a fair shake, and it's for our fans, yeah, we're trying to do a record and a tour every year. So hopefully you're going to see more and get more music out of us that way. We appreciate getting to do it, and we love doing it. So thanks for having us, Travis. Really appreciate it,
man. You got it, man. Tell us where to find it.
Oh, man, Viscera, all the places you normally would get music. It's in merch now. It's on iTunes. It's on Amazon. It's on all your little devices. It's in some stores. You have to look around to find it probably. But yeah, all the places you normally get music. It's on vinyl. It's on CD. It's digital, obviously. We did a limited edition vinyl, but those sold out. So now it's just it's pretty cool gold vinyl that's still available.
Cool.
But yeah, it's out there, man. Go get it. Go to facedown.com or merch now or iTunes and grab it.
Just
Right on.
Well, I'm gonna go pray for some sick people, man. But you have a great day.
Do it. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye, Jacob.
As the story grows.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.